He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right, Adam and Frank from Couch Potato Strong Podcast. Welcome to Beyond the Bend.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
This is a very cool experience, a little mutual exposure. I'm very happy to have you guys here. And I'm going to start it the same way I start them all. Tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
The first time that I saw someone bend a piece of steel was the traveling strongmen that went to churches. I was like, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. It was just after we moved up to the Northwest, and they were breaking baseball bats over their knees, and a guy bent a wrench on stage over his hip, and I was just like, this is crazy. And I think they did a horseshoe. I mean, it was a long time ago. It was, you know, 28 years ago, but that was definitely a huge experience for me. I was blown away. I couldn't believe these guys were doing the stuff they were doing. So that was also the first time I was exposed to just like strongman stuff in general.
Yeah, I'm a little younger. So he got into strongman. I must've been like 5 or 6, but when I can remember starting to get in it and watching it was Christmas Eve when they used to have strongman competition on ESPN all the time. And I'd watch World's Strongest Man with this guy. And I remember watching some older episodes of Jeff Capes and him bending steel over his head or in his teeth. That guy was nuts. I became a huge fan of Jeff Capes. I always thought he was a really cool strong man. And I think that's the first time I really saw steel bending in any kind of event period, and just thought that was really cool what they were doing. So
awesome. Yeah.
We started watching that right after the church thing. And those collar bends, those were nuts.
yeah, for sure. Both those answers are answers I've heard before, actually. It's pretty interesting, like, people's entry points into this. It's like, generally, a couple guys have said the church thing, which is, like, wild to me. What was the motivator there? Was it just, like, the power of the human spirit type of thing?
I think so. I think that was their whole message, yeah.
Cool. And then it's either that, they've seen Dennis Rogers, like, VHS tape somewhere along the way, or they've seen the old like 80s style World's Strongest Man. It's pretty interesting. So what about the first time you guys actually said, I want to try this stuff? What was that like?
Man, the first time I tried to do it was when I was pretty young. The first time I ever tried to bend, and I was horrible at it. I had no idea what I was doing. I was playing with grippers and I got a hold of some yellow nails and blue nails and I couldn't do anything with them. I think I put a very small warp in a yellow nail back when I was about like 19 years old and then set that off to the side until recently. So yeah, it was just because it was basically the other thing other than grippers and grip a long time ago.
Yeah.
The two most popular things when Iron Mind first started really doing things, it was the nails and the grippers.
Right. And what'd you use for wraps? I gotta know.
I just had this like 20 inch piece of suede. It's like really thin, a lot thinner than the leather. And it's just like 20 inch long piece of suede. I still have them. They're the pink wraps that you see in my videos once in a blue moon.
Okay.
I was like, I got into the powerlifting aspect. It was a little more attractive to me than bending at first. I've just recently started doing a little bit of bending and learning the techniques there. But when I was younger, I liked the whole strongman aspect. So I liked the stones. I like the random wrist rolling thing up the wall, anything like that, sandbag carries. That's kind of what inspired me more. And then as I grew through high school and stuff, I went more into a powerlifting style and did bench, squat, and deadlift. And I kind of wanted to get strong and look big back then. And, you know, as a teenager and you have a big ego, you had to get big arms and look good. So I worked a lot of core and arms, so.
Nice. Yeah, I always like asking about what people used for their wraps because it's like, it runs the spectrum of things. I think someone said they cut up an old pair of boots. It's usually like someone grabbed like a dish towel, you know, and like and the stuff that people try to bend initially is hilarious too. When I ordered my bag of nails, I was so excited, but I wanted to try it sooner, you know, and I didn't know really like what a 60 penny was or anything like that. So I just went out to the garage and found this, like, it's actually right here. It's like a little like IKEA bolt, right?
Oh, nice.
I think this is like maybe 3.5 inches long, maybe 3 or something like that. And just wrapped it up in a towel and was just like hitting on this thing so hard. It's actually bent because I went back to it and did it with real wrap. So that's, it's, everybody is always has these crazy stories about what they tried doing before they actually got the proper stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I was blown away by bending. I didn't have the right form. My father is a huge dude. He's 300 pounds. He tried back in the day and he could do the yellow nail and blue nail and kink the red nail. And that was out of just brute strength and being a, you know, construction worker for 30 odd years. But yeah, now I look at it and realize how hard that actually was. And that's pretty cool to think about.
Yeah. And I like that you guys are into it all. That's like something I'm the same way. Like the more I get into bending and the more people I talk to, the more I want to like play with the grip stuff. And I bought an Atlas stone recently and like the natural stone stuff. Like to me, this is all in the same world. And you guys as martial artists too, like it fits in there with that to me too. You know, it's not, this isn't like some separate thing I'm doing until I can get back to the mat. Like to me, this is all connected in some kind of way. And that's why I like
back to the mat and see how I can do now is really honestly where I'm at. I'm like, oh man, my wrist is so much stronger.
Right. And there is a connection because the old time strongmen were weightlifters. They were performing strongmen. And a lot of times they were grapplers and legit ones too. You know, eventually the work came into play in like the carny style and what we know as professional wrestling, but it actually at the root of it is all connected, which is very cool.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So you guys do a cool podcast. I've listened to a bunch of episodes. We've had a couple of the same guests, which is cool. I like listening to the guys that I've sat down and talked to answer different questions and stuff. But if you would just give the people that might not have heard it yet, just a little bit of a breakdown of what you guys are doing with your show.
So for the bending or for everybody?
For everybody.
Okay. Just,
what's the premise of your show?
So basically the premise of our show is at the start of the quarantine, we figured we needed to help people find out the best way to get fit at home. And everybody from professional athletes to, you know, your couch potato is at home trying to get fit. So we figured let's reach out to some top athletes, see if they want to do some cool stuff. Cause we had Atlas stones. We had a bunch of cool equipment that a lot of people don't have. And we had access to an area to do it. So we figured we'd reach out to some local athletes and see if they want to come on and teach people how to get fit at home. And it just grew from there.
Yeah. And I think one of our biggest motivations too, was we're not big into trade secrets or, you know, training secrets. We always kind of thought that was bogus. Like if you know something, why not teach everybody else? So that way we're all on the same playing field and it's all even. Like if you know the best training, why not show somebody so they can become the best version of them? And then you have a fair playing field to compete against them. And that's kind of what we thought when we started interviewing all the top athletes, like, hey, what's your secrets? How do you train? What's the best things we can do so we can share it massively amongst everybody and really just not only get stronger in a better way, but also the safest way so you can avoid injury. So people aren't scared to go work out. They're not afraid to work out at home. They actually have something they can follow and know, hey, this will be safe. I'm not going to blow out my back or my hip or my knees.
Yep, 100%. And I know you guys coming from a martial arts background, you know about people with secrets, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you want it, I mean, I get it that grip and bending was a secretive thing because a lot of people used it to make their income, but it's growing from that to a sport more or less. So, you know, I mean, yeah, you might step on a couple of people's toes as it grows into a sport, but the truth is, you know, the sideshow guys are still going to make a lot of money because it's very entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at it, really, the top guys, whether it is martial arts, whether it is, you know, bending or grip or whatever, Louis Simmons isn't holding any secrets back either. You know what I mean? So it's like the guys who know are sharing it. And the guys that are trying to hold something back, they're really not at the top anyway. That's the true facts of it. And it's like, I've always been weary of that. Like I've been around martial arts long enough where if there was any attitude, like, don't show anybody this, like, you got to be a little bit, like, suspicious of that person, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you guys have a cool angle with your show, a lot of psychology. I really, really enjoy listening to that aspect myself. So what kind of brought that aspect to the show?
I wanted to do something, honestly, I enjoyed your show a lot, and I wanted to do something with the bending that was a massive difference. So I figured I would take my psych experience. I did my dissertation on the psychological experience of power breaking. So martial arts like brick breaking. And I honestly think that doing a kink on a piece of steel is very similar to hitting a brick really hard and just hoping something happens, you know? So it's definitely it's a big moment. You know, that kink is a big moment. You might get injured, something crazy might happen. It might not move. It's the same thing with that hitting that brick, you know, it's a big moment. Your hand might go, you might get it. The brick might not bust. What's going to happen? You know, you're pretty sure you can do it when you do it. You should be pretty much 100% sure, but it's always going to be the PR moments.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm glad you said that actually, because I was talking to a friend of mine that's just totally outside this world, you know, like, and I forget how it came up exactly, but I had just snapped a big bolt or whatever. And he was asking me what that's like or something. And I was saying, you know, like the greatest thing this whole bending, snapping journey has really taught me is just like, it just expanded my belief in what I could do, right? And I think the same could be, I've never broken anything in a martial arts capacity, but I think it could be the same mentality. It's like, if you would have handed me this bolt before I had any experience doing this, I wouldn't have been able to do it just because my mind wouldn't have let me. And I'm not trying to go down this road of like, you know, superhuman, like mind stuff or anything like that. But there is some truth to like our bodies having a governor. And I'm not even talking about the grandma lifting the car or anything like that. I'm just talking about it on a more basic sense where it's like, I just would have been like, that's a bolt that's not supposed to bend. And therefore I wouldn't have been able to bend it. It wasn't until I saw people do this stuff, you know, and then like had some experience in myself working up to it. So that's what I'm really taking away is like, when I go back to jiu-jitsu or whatever my next endeavor might be, I'm going to set my sights that much further because I've had this experience of achieving something I never thought I'd be able to from the get, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, even in, I come from an engineering and business background myself, and I see it transfer over into those worlds as well. I mean, a lot of physics play into engineering. So it's like, well, is that, you kind of almost think, well, wow, that physically with physics, that's a weird thing to do and achieve with some of the lifts you can do and some of the bends you can do. It's just like, huh, that's kind of interesting. And then like you're talking about achieving and actually seeing yourself achieve more that you didn't think it could happen, play so huge in the business, really just going all out, whether it be on a business adventure or whatever it may be, having a goal in mind and actually achieving that, whether it be bending or powerlifting or strongman, you kind of have to take the same mentality into a new business adventure. Like, okay, I'm jumping into this business. I'm putting my money into it. Do I believe I could actually really achieve something? And having that background in martial arts and then in lifting later, you already know you could push yourself and your mind to a whole new level.
Yep. And that brings up another thing I talk about on the show a lot too. And I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts about it. It's, you know, like the Musashi quote, like, once you know the way, you see it in all things. Mm-hmm. You guys ever hear that one?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying it exactly right, but it's something I've thought about a lot, especially over this last year. It was like, I feel like I kind of understand what it takes to get good at something now, right? Because I took my ultimate undying passion / obsession with jiu-jitsu and just changed it to another thing, you know? Like, and when I talk about I'm laying in bed thinking about the bends and the things I want to do, I mean it, man. I'm like, I dream about this shit. I'm not lying. Like, I'm so laser focused. And it's not just me, like I'm speaking on behalf of the community. Like, I know, I've spoke to Don, Josh Goldthorpe, all these guys, everybody's the same way. Like, it's it's in your mind 24 hours a day. And I think that, like, to your point, Adam, that's got to be the way you have to be with business. I've never had my own business, but if I ever do, I'm going to try to be going to sleep thinking about it.
It's mental toughness. It's 100% mental toughness.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the grip feats being, like, only achieved by a handful of guys. I mean, it's probably because not so many people are training to do it, but, I mean, how many dudes at your local gym can hug lift a 45-pound plate? You know, it's hardly anybody. So, I mean, even when you've built up the strength to do it, like, overcoming the feat and actually doing it, there's, like, this wave of nerves that hit you before you do it, and then you do it, and you finally get used to it, and you become calm with it, and you overcome that, and you kind of control that feat. That's a really neat thing.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Really
neat thing in grip. Absolutely. And in bending, you know, I mean, first time I got the red nail, it was just like, oh, I felt like I was like Superman, you know? Now when I bend nails, it's a lot calmer. You know, I know what to expect. And I just ride that rush of nerves right up to the point where I know this is the moment that I'm going to have that power and go for it.
And I'm piggybacking off that. I think that's huge to overcome that nervousness in anything that you do in life. I mean, literally anything. You're going to be nervous at something new, whether it be lifting, playing sports, you got a big tournament coming up and you're competing, or you got a huge game and you might be the starting pitcher, or you have a new business adventure. You're going to be nervous and you're going to worry about if you can overcome that. And once you can control those nerves and come into a calm state, I think you get to see the big picture better.
Definitely. Definitely. And you mentioned the first time you bent a red nail, but this can translate over to like heavy lifts and stuff like that. And especially you guys being into like the psychological / emotional aspect of all this stuff. How long does that, say the first time you bent the red, like how long did that rush last for you? Was that like, were you psyched for like a couple days, a couple minutes? Because I've had this experience where like first tournament I ever won, man, I'm not lying, I probably was like on cloud nine for like 3-4 months after that, you know? And then the next one, you know, was like maybe a little less, a little less.
I was immediately disappointed.
Okay. Why?
And I know that sounds like a weird answer, but I was bending wrong forever.
Okay.
So I bent the yellow nail basically like in a weird Heslop manner that was like here. Okay. Yep. I was bending just down. That's all I was doing. It was all just, I mean, I was coming up, but I wasn't going out. I was just all just tucking my arms to my body and just yanking down with my wrist. And it took me a while to get a yellow nail that way. And I think the main reason that I wasn't able to do a yellow nail before when I was like 19, because I wasn't strong on the grippers. At that time, I think I'd worked up to where I could close like a 2, and now I can almost close a 3 and like rep the 2.5 pretty easily. And my lever strength is a lot better. So I was able to do it wrong this time. I was able to get the yellow nail with bad technique and get the blue nail with bad technique and even get some quarter inch square with bad technique. So then finally someone gave me the right advice. And then when I did the red nail, it felt easier than when I did a yellow nail. I mean, honestly, it was, oh man, that's it. I was like 70% power into it, but then it was like, oh, well, what can I do now? So you know, it was disappointing, but it was also like, whoa, this is awesome. I didn't realize I had that kind of power. So yeah, when you find the groove in the position, it really blows your mind on what you could then accomplish.
Yeah. And how about you, Adam, with any lifts or anything? What was like, do you let yourself enjoy it, or are you just like a moment and then you're already thinking about the next thing?
I do probably a mixture of both. I mean, when I set a record in high school, I probably enjoyed that for about a day, but then the next day it was back to training. Like, okay, I doubled my body weight for bench press at, you know, 17 years old.
Hell yeah.
I was 175 and I put up a 331 at the gym in our school, and then I came home actually and 2 days later did 351 or 352 or
753.
Yeah, 353 at 175. Yeah. And I mean, that I was probably for a day or two because I was like, wow, double my body weight at 17 years old. But then it's like, well, where do I go from here? You know, what can I do now? Can I hit 400? Yeah. Can I do this? And so I probably ride the wave for about a day or so, and then to me, it's back to training, back to your 9-to-5 job, but it's, you know, in the gym. It's get done, keep going, and set the next goal and try to achieve that.
Definitely. Why I ask is because the first red nail I did, this was something in the cert conditions and all that. Like, this was something that I really worked hard for. And, you know, as it was closing, I swear I was thinking about the guys that can do them in one pad. I had to like check myself because I was like, just enjoy this. Like, and it was like, boom. And I was like, I should really learn how to do these in one pad. Like, it was like, I couldn't even let myself just like enjoy that. And I'm trying to be better. Honestly, as we're speaking here now, I'm trying to think about not ripping myself apart over my form on the deadlift tonight. You know, it's like, yeah. I think there is, you don't want to rest on your laurels or whatever people say, but you also want to be like somewhat kind with yourself. You don't want to just beat yourself into the ground all the time, you know, right? Well,
I mean, you just said you did your red in cert conditions. I didn't do mine in cert conditions. I had double wraps. So now I got something I got to work toward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like that, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're both working on certifying number 3. So that's going to be something awesome. And yeah, we're hoping to do that for our competition coming up in July, because we're very excited that B-Craft's going to bring Jesse Mirundes number 3 gripper.
Nice.
And we're going to be able to try to cert on that gripper itself, and that would be sweet.
Yeah, for sure. Close,
you know, Legends gripper, and just be able to get on that cert list and do a number 3. So
you guys have been playing around with grippers for a while then, right?
I've been playing around with grippers for a long time, yeah. I got my first set of grippers probably, I think it was in the late 90s. They were the single stamp ones.
Okay.
I wound up selling those later because they became collectible. Yeah, I got into grippers. I was probably like 15 years old when I got into grippers. 14, 15 years old from there.
What kind of actual, what is your experience with transfer to martial arts grip strength with the grippers? Because I know Jed Johnson's been pretty outspoken about saying like grippers only get you strong for grippers or something like that. And like, if you want to be strong for martial arts, you want to do your thick bar and this and that. So someone with firsthand experience, I'd like to know what your experience was with that.
Let me get a gripper real quick.
I mean, what I've noticed is I think there is a technique for grippers.
Yeah.
And it will make you stronger. But to a point, I think Jed Johnson's a little bit correct on that, because you could train the gripper so much and do nothing else that you'll be really good at grippers and have a weaker grip strength. But I think also when you get into it now that you realize there's so much more to grip that you can start doing heavy fat bar and it'll improve your grippers later. But I mean, it's going to, in martial arts, your grip and getting better at grippers is going to overwhelm your opponent when you grab them and they don't know what the hell is to do because your grip's so strong, they can't get out of it and they're just stuck. It'll shock them tremendously.
So, as you know, as a martial artist, you get really creative with the tools you have. You have to, you know what I mean? I only had grippers. So I didn't just only use them like this, you know?
Yeah.
I used them like this.
With the fingertips. Know? Yeah,
stuff
yeah.
Stuff like that. So then you get back into the ring and you grab somebody and you got those fingertips like that. You leave bruises all over their body. They don't like to roll with you anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just a little bit, it's a different experience when you roll with somebody that has hard conditioned fingertips.
Oh yeah. You know?
And that's a big difference. It's an eye opener for a lot of guys that you roll with. So I think that it definitely translates. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I don't, when I think of martial arts, I don't train for the ring. I train for real world self-defense more. So to me, like everything grip that makes your fingers stronger means you can grab an object from the ground and hit somebody harder with it and it won't come out of your hand. Maybe you can grab something, you know, you can grab them harder. You can grab something that pulls you away from something. You can grab, you know, whatever you need to do. Maybe you need to shoot a pistol and get a tight grouping and have a strong wrist. All of that stuff. I think of real world self-defense and grip is huge for that.
So in your martial arts training, are you doing any sport kind of stuff or do you just primarily focus on it?
Yeah, I used to compete, but I don't do that anymore. I train just for real world self-defense.
Okay. And is there like a live training aspect with that where you can actually try out the stuff you're working on?
Oh, absolutely. We have all kinds of neat drills. Like have two, you know, advanced level students stand next to a door and you try to get through it. I mean, that's nice. A fun drill. Obviously any training on the concrete, training in shoes, training in normal clothes, grappling in normal clothes, all of that stuff is, you know, super important.
Yeah. That's, you know, this year, obviously, for most people, it's you've had a lot of time to think about a lot of things. And I think I was saying on the episode with Sean Doherty is like, when I go back to training, like I got so specific, you know, like jujitsu specific to sport jujitsu, specific to guard play, to leg locks. Like I was into competition, you know, so I developed a very particular game to win competitions. But when I reflect back on being a young boy, like getting totally obsessed with martial arts before I ever practiced them, mm-hmm. what I've become as a grappler and greater as a martial artist is not necessarily what I set out to be as a kid, you know, like I want to get more well-rounded and train some more of this combative kind of stuff that you're talking about, because there certainly is a big difference between, you know, sport jujitsu and like the real world street defense type stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Meditations on Violence by Rory Miller is a good one that compares it. He's a sergeant local. He's actually a local police enforcer that studied martial arts all his life and then got into being an officer. And he just totally exposes the difference between the two. And yeah. I really learned the difference between the two when I started working in fields of enforcement, like working as either a bouncer, security officer, doorman. I did a couple jobs like that. And then I worked in a psych unit for a long time as an enforcement officer.
Yeah.
And it taught me that awareness and timing and understanding your opponent was basically the key aspect of the world of self-defense, that you're never going to be in a good position, that you just need to accept that all those, you know, set stances and positions that you learn are just a foundation that you just need to use real quick and use your timing right, and then go in there and take care of business. So
I've always thought about just like, I don't know if I would like to think about the reality aspect of it all the time though, you know, because same as like home defense, and you know, maybe I'm the minority here, but I'm just speaking personally, it's like if all I was ever thinking about was training against some life or death situation, I feel like my relationship with martial arts would be so different, you know, like I don't want it to be like a high stress thing where I'm training for this situation that I hope never happens. You know, I kind of like the idea that I'm training for a situation that's going to happen every night, like 10, 15 times a night or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I've always thought about that dichotomy there.
I think it takes away part of the passion and the fun if you're always training for like a real world situation of home defense. If you're training with a pistol or a shotgun or whatever, actually my brother-in-law has been a long time SWAT officer, and I've trained with him a lot for home defense and what'll happen if someone breaks in. But then he's always made it fun to a point in our training to let's go do some weird stuff, see if you can walk in some weird pattern and still shoot bullseyes, or can you hit this can over here while I throw up some other ski and you shoot that, and then do like some, you know, shoulder roll and something completely ridiculous. And it's 100% to get your mind off of that pattern so much so that you can see it from a different angle, and then be excited to actually go back to, you know, make sure that you're doing the basics. You can do home defense. You can be right on when you need to. It just allows you to take things off your mind for a while, because I think if you're so mundane on the same thing over and over and over again, it's going to actually hurt you in the long run.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and tying that back into like grip and what we're talking about here, like you can just use an achievement, like say you want to do a towel pull-up, you know, and you can, you know that's just an achievement you're focused on entirely for grip, but know that that also translates to like you can grab somebody's, you know, outfit a lot harder, you can grab their gi a lot harder, or you know, you can coat the towel with some syrup and then know that you may be training for a bloody situation, but you may not have, you know, have to think of it, you just know that it's there.
Absolutely,
you got to get creative with your training for sure to keep it fresh.
Definitely. That was like, once I became aware of like Bud Jeffries and stuff, I've said it before, like that dude was such an inspiration, like discovering his training and just like the way he mixes things up and just like obviously makes it so fun, but still brutally strong. He was that was revolutionary for me.
I think Adam Glass is the same way. I mean, his quote that we have this month is sameness is lameness.
Yeah. You know?
So he's always switching it up too. And, you know, we've been talking a lot with him and, just getting some really cool training tips from him, and he's all about switching it up too. So,
yeah, I don't think John Brookfield could go into a hardware store without coming out with 15 new grip ideas.
Yeah. Adam reminds me of like the master's master in the strength game, right? Because his dedication and passion and like maturity, and I say maturity because he PRs all the time, right? But he doesn't seem all that excited about it, and he's not going to sacrifice form for a PR. Like, his training is so mature, and he's just like working towards these goals so diligently and never getting like too excited about anything. It just seems like the grandmaster's master, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just consistent, calm, consistent, you know, keep that end goal in mind. 100%.
Yeah.
Get 1% better each day.
Yeah. Hard to do. I'm not on that level of maturity with this stuff yet by any means.
So should we run through some questions?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Okay. So we'll do just our basic questions, and then we can get into some psych stuff too. So these ones will be done like real quick, like round robin. So awesome. What motivates me to compete is that on that day, I like to know that I can show up. And usually for me, I'm typically a little bit sleep deprived or a little bit over nervous if it's a competition or some sort of an event. So I like to know that on that day, I can do what I can do. And that if I take it outside of that, if I'm having a bad day and I need to defend myself or throw down or whatever, that I can do it no matter what. Or if I need to use my strength, that I can do it. If it's a strongman competition, I like to know that on an off day, I can still perform.
Nice. Nice. And these are questions that you ask routinely on your show, Ben?
Yeah. Yep. We ask these ones to everybody. And then I got some psych questions for the bending guys that we'll get into those a little bit too.
Cool. Cool. All right. So okay. You know, it's funny because there was a time where I felt like competition wasn't for me, right? Like I played sports growing up and never really got too much fulfillment out of that. At an early age, I kind of understood that like I could maybe have nothing to do with that win if I didn't really play much in soccer or baseball or whatever. And then by the time I got into martial arts and did my first jiu-jitsu tournament, I just got like my nerves got the best of me really bad. I just got tapped really quick and just really wasn't able to perform. And that happened a bunch of times. And I kind of got to the point where I was like, I don't think I'm, you know, like what people say, like, I don't think competition is for me. And then actually I worked one of my good friends who actually I work for his company, which is a psychotherapy group, Thayer, one of the strongest dude. Like I ask on my podcast, who's the strongest person you know? And if I ever got asked that, I would say Thayer. Like this dude, he just like is so explosive, strong, and like athletic. It's just a crazy mix. And he's like 205 pounds and moves like faster than me. And is super smart. He's just like, and I taught him all the moves I know. So he's like just a bigger, badder version of me. So it's been great for training. But anyway, so he took me through some techniques to like calm myself before competition, right? It's just like some like softening of the abdomen and like some visual stuff and really some kind of like mild sports psychology stuff. And I took that stuff and I had the greatest training camp. And I went out and I won. I got gold in the gi and then like silver no gi or something like that. And that was just like, boom, such a breakthrough, right? So then like my fear was gone. And then after that, I just liked having something to work towards. I just liked a finite date that I knew I had to show up. And I knew I had to put in a lot of work. And it just was like this motivating factor week in and week out. And trust me, like I train super hard, even if I don't have a competition coming up, but I've found even more with myself through the bending stuff is like, I'm a very goal oriented person. Like, it's just, I love like working towards that goal, you know, and it's awful. It's hard too, when it doesn't get achieved, you know, but I like the intensity of like, I've said on the show before, like the glory is all on me. You know, that day I won the gold and the silver or whatever. That was like, yeah, my team helped me get there. But at the end of the day, I was out there alone and I tapped those guys and that's all me. And if I would have choked and not shown up that day, that would have been on all me too. So I like the stakes being high like that as well.
Okay. Adam?
Yeah, I grew up playing a lot of street ball, other than martial arts. So I always liked the I was competitive. It didn't matter what it was, man. We'd be making paper airplanes. I'd try to beat you to making a paper airplane. I don't care. I just wanted to beat somebody, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of grew up super competitive. Like I said, I played a lot of street ball and basketball. I was kind of a triathlete in school. But just as I matured, I really liked when competition day came, it was put up or shut up. And if you got some buddies there, you could have fun with it and have some friendly smack talk. And it's like, well, we're in competition, so this is actually when it counts. I don't care what you did last week in your home gym. I'm out here and this matters. It's going to be judged. It's time to beat you right now. So yeah, that was fun. And then getting into the grip community and strongman, now it's turned into more, can I beat myself every day? Can I set a goal, achieve it? And then can I outperform what I did maybe last competition or last week? And really achieve your goals and keep pushing yourself and beating yourself each and every time you're in the gym, you know, whether you feel good or not, just having that mentality of I need to get better. And then competition really tells you, okay, I'm there. I've actually put in the training. What the hell am I training for if I'm not going to go out and actually test it?
Yep. Nice.
So we'll do a question like that, then we'll do a bending question. So bending question. So before I go for a big bend, I'm super nervous. That's my experience leading up to a bend. I'm always nervous every time I go up for a bend. And I kind of think I like that. I like that it makes me a little bit nervous. I pace around for probably like 5 minutes or so, maybe 10 minutes before I bend, thinking about it. I'll get the bend wrapped up and then I'll step away from it and like pace around again for a little while. I'm never calm enough to just go in there, cut a bolt, file the ends, wrap it up and go right to the bend. I can't do that. For me, I have to get ramped up, and it takes, like, if I'm going for a bigger bend, it probably takes me like 15, 20 minutes to a half hour to actually like get to the mindset or get prepared enough. Uh-huh. And it's weird. There's a feeling you get when you know that you're just nervous enough to have all the power and still have the self-control to do it, but you're so nervous that you're going to tap into a little bit more aggression when you actually go for it. So it's not anger for me. Some guys say they're very angry when they bend. For me, it's not anger. It's sort of like getting to the highest ramped up state that I can be in while maintaining a calmness, if that makes sense. I think that you've probably experienced that before fights, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you just repeat the first part of the question?
It's just what's your psychological experience like before a bend? Do you get nervous or anxious before a bend? What's that like?
Okay. So if it's something I've never done, I'm not all that nervous. I'm kind of just more excited about it. And I spend a little bit of time getting psyched up, and I definitely feel the nerves kick in a little bit as I start rapping. I honestly don't like filming the bends. Like the whole like cert process is pretty like anxiety provoking in me. It's just like, I hate to like put it off camera or something and have the thing not count. It's just, and I also just like, I don't know, the whole thing feels kind of weird to me, but it's just part of it. And so I start getting a little bit more nervous as I'm rapping, and I never rap as good as I should and all that stuff. But like, it's like, I definitely get pretty psyched up. On Tanner's episode, he did this visual cue that I've been using recently. Is he said he gets to a point where he feels like ants are crawling on the inside of his eyeballs.
Yeah,
like just getting hyper, like intense about it.
Yeah, Don says his fingers start twitching.
Yeah. And I kind of just like start maybe grunting a little bit, like get a. But if it's something I failed, man, then the nerves are super high. Like that really messes with me. Like if I've failed on a bend before, it's tough to go back and complete that. I'm actually trying to, as I speak here, think of examples of something I've failed and then gone back to complete. But yeah, it's Yeah, actually, a 10-inch wrench braced. I failed that a bunch of times. And when I finally got that, that was really cool. But that was like a whole psychological game. Also, the gold nail brace the first time, that was a big thing. That, and it's such a rush when these things start to move, that like makes it all worth it. But yeah, I definitely struggle with the ones I failed before. It's hard to like get in a state where I feel like I'm going to get it, because I feel like bending takes so much out of you. That's why I've dialed my frequency so much back with it, because I just feel like if you're doing big stuff, you can't be doing it more than once or twice a week max, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm the exact opposite of you guys, which is weird, because after high school, I got really into bowling. And that's
nice.
Actually got really good at it. I had some amazing coaches, some world-class coaches that went international and coached the Philippines to gold cups and stuff like that. But it's such a repetitive sport that you have to stay calm all the time, because it's so accurate with lane conditions, and your form has to be the exact same every time. Yeah. That you learn how to be calm in a nervous situation. And I think that carried over to like competition for me and like lifting. Before a big lift, I always get really calm. Like I just settle down, take deep breaths, and I'm not nervous at all. I try to just almost get into somewhat of a sort of meditative state, because yep. Aggressive explosion comes really easy to me. So I might grunt out a lift. I might grunt when I'm pulling other guys, but right before that moment actually happens, I'm very calm and collective and almost, like I said, in a meditative state, because I know it's going to come. I know the aggression will come. I know when, you know, as I need to put it out and start grunting and almost have that aggressive anger almost, that it'll be there, and it's always going to be there for me. So I don't have to try to get amped up beforehand. I try to just stay calm and not think about it, and then explode when I need to.
Yeah. I saw this awesome thing on TV about Shaolin monks, and they hooked him up to all these sensors before he like broke something over his face or something wild, and like his pulse dropped, his core temperature dropped, all of this stuff right before the moment when he did the break. It was really interesting. So it kind of, like you're saying, like the total opposite of getting revved up.
Absolutely. That's wild. Yeah. So let's see, my greatest athletic achievement, you know, I'm gonna go way back to like fifth grade. And it was probably getting Presidential Physical Fitness Award. I hated running. And that was the first thing I think I ever worked hard for. I tried to get it in fourth grade and I got nationals and I was pissed about it. So that was the first time I ever trained really hard for something, and trained all of fourth grade, ran all summer, was ready in fifth grade to get that dang patch. So that was probably fine, honestly, because that set me on a path to, you know, to know what hard work can achieve, basically.
Wow. Can I go third on this one? I'm going to think about this one.
Sure. Absolutely.
Man, it's tough to think of one particular athletic achievement that I consider the best, but one that I was definitely proud of, I think, like I said, is double body weight bench press in high school. There's some super stud football player that had the record before me at 175 pound class. It was like 306 was the record. And for a year and a half, it was like, I'm going to crush that guy. I'm going to crush his stupid record. I'm going to bench more than him. And I'm going to get up there and it's going to be my name up there and it's not going to matter. And I think I tried solid for about a year and a half to make sure that I could stay at 175 pounds and put up, you know, 300 plus pounds. I didn't want to beat it by 2 pounds. I thought that'd be ridiculous. I was like, I got at least 230, you know, I got to beat it so nobody questions it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I beat him by 25 pounds and had a good lift that day. And I actually did it the last day of senior year, because I waited to the end so I could make sure I could lift the most. And I mean, be able to rip that guy's name in half and put your name up there and, you know, just talk smack for that whole day and be like, see, I told you I could do it. You know, I think that kind of started me onto a path of really motivating yourself to achieve goals that you want to reach.
For sure. Nice. You know, So I'm like long time skateboarder. That was like, I quit all sports in ninth grade because I wanted to skateboard more. So I remember when I, this was earlier than ninth grade because I started skating earlier. It was just practice was getting in the way of skating. So I remember when I first learned to kickflip, you know, if you talk to any skateboarders, they always remember that one because that's a big deal. But I learned the kickflip, and then the next day I went to, we had a post office in our town where we'd skate, and it was like a 3.5-4 foot like loading dock in the back. And I remember the next day I spent like 6 hours probably like trying to land this thing, and I finally landed the kickflip. That one sticks out in my mind as something just funny as a kid. And then another instance, and this just popped into my mind, this is a hard question actually, but this dude came to train in our academy. He was visiting from somewhere else, and he was like a college wrestler and like just like a super physical specimen. I don't even know what he looked like LeBron James or something. Like, this dude was super tall, super strong, super big. And he had a white belt on. So of course this is when I was like a blue belt, mid blue belt, something like that. And I had like, okay, you have this stupid idea like of the belts meaning anything, right? Yeah. It's like, this dude is a physical specimen, but he has a white belt on. So in my mind, I'm like, obviously I should be able to beat him.
One rank higher.
Yeah. And it was just like sweep or submit, right? Like I just had to sweep him from guard or submit him. And we fought and fought and fought to the whole time when I eventually swept him, which after, I don't know, it may be like a 10 minute round or something like that, of just trying everything and like my grips, just everything. I eventually swept him, and I looked up to realize like the whole academy of everybody was like watching us, you know. It was like, here I am at like 150 pounds. And this dude, this monster dude, that's just like shredded. Like, I just remember getting that sweep and just feeling really cool about it.
That's awesome. That's yeah, incredible, man.
That's funny you said how to learn how to kickflip. I just remembered when you said that at my buddy's apartment, when his parents weren't home, we moved out his coffee table from his front room, brought out the skateboards. He's like, today I'm going to teach you how to kickflip on the carpet.
Yes.
Way to learn. That's it. Awesome.
Yeah, man.
That's crazy. So you talked a little bit about your self-talk with bending. So when I go for a bend, I tell myself all kinds of crazy stuff, man. I use positive and negative reinforcement. I say, man, if you do this, you know, you're the shit. You're going to gain respect, even though it's totally not true. Like, three people care if you do the bend, but I tell myself, oh, if I do this, I'll gain the respect of the monsters. I'll be like Jeff Gates, oh, you know? And I mean, I get myself pumped up that way, but I also tell myself, like, if I don't do this, I'm just nothing, man. It's just like, if you don't do this, you might as well just give up. Like, it's all this or it's nothing. You know, yeah. And I tell myself and I convince myself that like, this is it. This is the most important thing that matters at that time, you know? And I try to talk myself into that sort of a mental state where when I'm going for it, it's everything. It doesn't matter anything else in my life. Someone could call and say, you know, you're bankrupt. And I'd be like, I don't care. I'm bending this nail, you know? And that's it for me. That's my main talk, is it's a way of just getting myself to that point, you know, telling myself anything that I can tell myself, as crazy as it is, to where I can tap into fight or flight and just fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. But this, you know, so I was recently, I had the privilege of messaging with Eric Milfeld quite a bit leading up to his, the written interview that just came out for him. We were talking about lifting, and he was giving me some tips on squatting. And he was talking about when he's coming up out of the squat, he thinks about all the reasons he shouldn't squat that day. And I was like, damn, that's sick. Like, I'm going to start using that, you know? And so like, then in the days since that, I've, you know, been trying to do like max effort or whatever, I realized that when it's actually time to perform the thing, I don't think I'm thinking about anything. I don't think there's any talk going on. If the thing starts to go bad, then the negative voice comes in, and it's like, oh, it's going bad. Like, you're going to fail this, obviously, you know, like, and especially if it's like harder than I expect from the start. Like, I set out to do a Harito snap the other day, and it just was way harder from the week. I wound up just scrapping the whole thing because I've gained some semblance of maturity over the last year. It's like, rather than killing myself just to complete it and not even get the cert, I was just like, I'll just try this thing another day. But yeah, it's like, there's not a whole lot of positive talk. I've really worked on that a lot. And that's why I brought up the Sean Doherty episode to you, because he said something so great about that. And it's like, he connected it to almost like an egotistical thing, to have like a separate voice you use with yourself versus maybe the your other people in your life, or if you're in a teaching role, like your students, right?
Yeah.
Like when, sure. when I coached jujitsu, there I would never talk to somebody the way I talk to myself internally, right? I just never would. And it's like, what? Yeah, you want to be hard and you want to get stuff done and be like Goggins and all this stuff, but like, to an extent, you know, like I think it can be pretty toxic if you're just like in your head. Like, it leads to overtraining, it leads to injury, it leads to all this stuff. So I've been really working on like just using the same amount of patience and like love as I would to like someone I was teaching jujitsu when I'm like talking internally to myself about physical endeavors.
Yeah, that's super important what you said about keeping those two separate.
Absolutely. I mean, I have learned, I think it's been awesome, is to only be positive to myself before I lift. Yeah. I'll first visualize the end result. So if I'm deadlifting, I visualize myself locking that weight out. Like, I know it's going to happen. I'm just going to visualize myself doing it. And the Paul and tackle goal has actually kicked my ass last few times. I keep going for 303 and I failed twice. It's pissing me off. But each time, I mean, I visualize it, the lockout. I visualize where my grip is. And then I always tell myself, you got this. You're the man. This is what you train for. This is why you come to the gym. Let's get it. Let's do it. And you're going to power through it. And then when you struggle, I think I always yell to myself, tough, tough, tough it out more. Just grab it harder and struggle and get it up there. Because then I start thinking, like, the bar's an object that's going to beat me, and I don't want that because I'm super competitive. Yeah. Like, I can't let the bar beat me. If it goes down to the ground before I pull it all the way up, I lose, and I don't like to lose. So,
yeah.
You know, it's where, you know, that aggression comes from. It's like, oh, heck, no, I'm not losing this. I'm pulling you up.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's a good segue about what you just said about visualization. So, yeah, when I go into a bend, what I see is I try to get like that really detailed, hyper detailed visualization where I'm seeing like the bar just right at that midpoint starting to melt, seeing those, you know, when the bar starts to melt and you see the little fractures in the bar start to show up, the little splints or striations, whatever you want to call them, you know, I see those and I see my hands gripping on it really tight. And I try to just imagine the motion of the bar moving, the motion of that first kink, just seeing it move. Is everything in my mind is what I want to do before I go for the bar. I need to see that movement or else the bar is not going to bend for me. So that's my, where my visualization is put at. And I have to be in an environment where I can do it. Like, a lot of people play pumped up music and things like that when they bend. That's not the environment that's ideal for me. So yeah. I guess the question is what you visualize and what the environment is ideal for you. For me, I need to be in a calm environment. I can't be distracted too much by the weather. If it's real hot or real cold, I might notice that a little bit, but that's, you know, you deal with that. But I need to be in a quiet environment when I bend, typically. Just me, the bar, calmness, and that way I can try to access the aggression that I need to access. I can't do it if there's distractions. Music actually doesn't really do it for me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for me, let's see, like with visit, it's, I don't do a whole lot in the moment, I'm realizing, because someone was telling me with like some tips with my deadlift. They're like, you know, stand like 3 feet behind it or whatever, think about the lift, visualize the whole thing, and then just like walk up and do it. I don't really do that. Like, I do more visualization like right before I'm falling asleep. That's when I'm thinking about the feats that I want to do and probably keeping myself up, but that's especially with jujitsu, that's when I'd be running through moves and like I could almost, I've said it before, it's just kind of crazy, but I would just like run through these sequences and just think about what the person's going to do to defend it and then what I'm going to do to counter that. And I get like, I swear there's been times where I've been thinking about it so deeply I can like smell the mat and the geese, you know what I mean?
Almost like Zarius with his chest descriptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as like bending and stuff, I'm trying to think, like, I don't think I do a lot of visualization like right before it happens, to be honest. I do more of that like when I'm cooking up the feet, or if I know I'm like this Saturday I'm going to do like some snap or whatever, I'll be thinking about it leading up to it. But definitely I don't think I really think about much in the moment, and I always have music playing. It depends if it's I used to put on really crazy stuff and try to get real angry about it, but then like I've just been kind of trying to not like get as intense with things. So I just have always music in the background, but that's just like part of my training.
Nice. I think interviewing a couple of guys that knew bending, and they've always been kind of the people that can joke around as they're going up to a bend and just see the audience and mess around is really cool. I've been able to transfer into that because not in bowling though. Bowling, I was always like, I got to hit the stupid 10 board, and I just look at it and just stare at that board because, you know, it's so thin. It's like, I just have to hit it. If I don't hit it, I'm going to be off. It's going to move. It's not going to hit the pocket right. But going into lifting, I visualize that lift before I even walk up. And then I walk up, I've noticed just competing with some of the guys who compete with, their crowds are crazy and they have cowbells out and they're ringing that damn thing for 5 minutes. And that, Mike Wilfong that comes out with us likes to yell at you when you're lifting and telling you you're doing awesome. And I've been able to kind of learn how to play off that. So I'll visualize my lift first, but then I could also be aware of like my surroundings and kind of, you know, play off them. Like, oh yeah, you're going to get that. And I'm like, damn right, I'm going to get it. Watch it. So to visualize before. And then I always, like I said, try to keep that calm manner and then just be able to just be loose and just go for it and put 100% effort into it. So
nice.
I've always kind of done the same thing, visualized it before you go up, not during it, but I've tried to visualize always the end result in a positive way that I'm going to achieve this, and never giving yourself any doubt at all that it won't happen.
Nice.
And that's even after I fail something, the next time I do it, it's back to the same mindset. I'm going to do it. I know I can do it. It's going to happen. So that's where I've been. But one of the next questions is, what is your greatest blunder or injury? The one I can think of offhand is just hilarious. Getting into the community we did and having some friends that we do, they always threw out challenges. And our buddy Jeremy Kaufman threw out a farmer's walk challenge, which was never a farmer's walk. I mean, this guy is like, yeah, let's do a farmer's run, basically. Can you carry these 35-pound plates, you know, as far as a certain distance in a certain amount of time? I'm like, there's no way you walked. You had to full-on sprinted. So me being stupid, I'm like, I'm going to beat him. You know, and then I think I had him too. And then about 75% down the course, I pulled my hamstring, just limping the rest of the way. I was like, Frank, come take these weights from me. I'm dying. And then like a day or two later, I don't know where it was at. It might've been somebody's book that says the number one rule is don't try any of your stupid friends' challenges.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, damn, I guess that was pretty dumb, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man. So it's what's your biggest blunder or injury?
Blunder or injury. So blooper or an injury that you've had. I mean, we had a guy share that he didn't get injured much, but he went to go pick up a squat, a bunch of weight, and he was so tense that he just threw the bar off his back.
Dave.
That was Dave. Yeah, that was Dave Nisbet, exactly.
That cracked me up. Yeah. I mean, so I hurt my back deadlifting, just thinking that like rooting and bracing and form was like something that I didn't need to do, being foolish. Like, what's all this fluff that these guys are doing before they lift? I'm just going to go over here and pick this thing up. And hurt my back doing that, which I, you know, felt really dumb because I was out of doing an exercise that I enjoy quite a lot. For bending stuff, let's see. My cat is making all this noise. Hang on one second. Come here. For bending stuff, let's see. I've tried that 12-9 at 5.5 that Don is trying, and I've poked through two sets of wraps with it, just like I've pierced two sets of wraps with that thing. Now I just want to bend it. I don't, there's no way I'll do it in time, but I also have one at 6 inches stalled out too. So I'm stuck at six and a half with that thing. But, and I'm trying to think, I mean, I've skinned my hands so bad before. I said, so when I interviewed, Amir Bayor, he was the first dude that was really snapping horseshoes. He, like, up until that, a few people had done it, like not that many people, to be honest. And it was really thought of as like quite a feat. So I had talked to him and I had talked to David Wigren like in the same week. And I was like, oh, horseshoes are where it's at. I'm gonna bend one of these things. And not only am I going to bend it, I'm going to snap it. So I snapped like an ultralight number two, and took me probably like an hour or something like that. So when Dave set the record, it's just mind-boggling. But then I went on to the next step up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like a polo, but it's like an ultralight, but a little bit bigger between like a regular light and an ultralight. And I set out to snap this thing, and it was on my son's birthday. I remember it was actually right around the time I hurt my back. So I was just like in a mental tizzy. So I was like, all right, I'm going to be the first dude to snap a polo, or as far as I knew. And I set out to do this thing, and I spent about an hour and a half, and my hands were just like just shredded, and I was in this pool of sweat, my hips were bleeding, and I just went upstairs, and my wife's like, what are you doing down there? There's just a picture on my Instagram of me like holding the horseshoe with my hands just like falling off. And I got my revenge on it later. I went back and snapped it, even though everybody's like, you should start a new one, it's going to be work hard and this and that. But I had a vendetta against that particular horseshoe. So I went and finished the snap, but I felt dumb because I was out of not only bending, but lifting for probably, you know, a week and a half till I could grip something, you know? So it's like in one of those moments where I was like losing sight of even completing the feat, but I was like so frustrated and so deep into it, I just pushed myself to a level that really wasn't necessary. Like,
yeah.
So
that reminded me of Ben Edwards for some reason when he's telling us we need to step up our 1-inch V bar. He goes, but be careful, because I degloved myself doing a 1-inch V bar. And you want me to try it?
Yeah, that sounds fun.
That's how you get your crusher grip up. I'm like, oh, well, thanks.
Yeah.
let's see, my greatest bending related blunder injury. Adam can attest to this. I've been trying to figure out the most creative ways that I can bend the yellow nail. I'm like, I'm going to bend it behind my back and behind my head. Nice. And whatever, nice. You know, around an Atlas stone, like all this crazy stuff. Oh, right? Yeah. So I came up with this, this idea that I was going to do a Superman bend, which was a Heslop bending style, but laying on your stomach with your arms in front of you. Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
So I'd never seen someone do it. I thought, oh, that's going to be cool. Nobody's ever done this before. I don't know anybody doing this bend. It's a different style of bending. It'll be neat. I didn't realize basically what you're doing is you're just holding your arms above your head doing a bend.
So yeah.
I tweaked my left shoulder and I was like messed up for probably 2 weeks because the bend was all just complete, just shoulder torque is all it was.
Yeah.
And, it was just brutal. I mean, I couldn't put anything into it in that position other than using my arms, and I had to bend it. So put everything into it. And yeah. My left arm was messed up for a couple of weeks, but now I know what else Superman bends. Like, that's why no one's done that before.
We were, for those feet of the weeks I was doing, one of them was a plank snap. So I said, take a piece of like 3/16 and like hold yourself in a plank and snap this thing on brace. That was like really tough. Only a few people tried that. And then another one that's cool, similar to what you're talking about, is I think Circo did like 305 or something, like hold it in a Zercher squat and then do an unbraced bend like that. And tear a deck of cards. I think Josh has done that one too.
I've seen Goldthrop do that. Yeah, exactly.
I want to do that, but it's going to be like 225 maybe.
That's the old Bud Jeffries thing. He used to hold a person. Yep. Yeah, he used to hold a person like this and tear a deck of cards or bend a nail. That's an awesome feat right there.
Yeah, the sandbags, all that stuff is cool. Like, I like the combo feats. I've been doing those here and there for the feet of the week stuff, but it's totally random what people get into and what people don't. It's kind of weird.
So for me, I think that confidence is probably the most important thing when I go for a bend. And if I have failed a bend several times and I go after a bend again, that's the number one factor. for me is confidence. And even so, after I complete a bend, I've failed several times. It is a big rush. It's a big rush that I ride for a few days, for sure. It's a bigger rush than bending the red nail was for me, because I never really like tried with the right technique and failed it before. So when I try a bend that I have failed now with decent technique and I get it, I think it's a huge deal for me. So how does confidence play a role for your bending, and what's that do for you when you finally accomplish a bend that you failed a bunch of times?
Yeah, I mean, confidence is a real key component to bending, for sure. I mean, I guess it is for everything, except bordering on like overconfident. You know, because I've been so into the regular lifting lately that, you know, like the bending is like down to like once a week or something like that. It's an interesting mindset we get into with the bending, because we're going 100% confidence, 100% effort. And, you know, we're really like throwing ourselves into this thing. And if I go with that same mentality and go try to squat 500 pounds right now, I'm going to like wreck myself, you know, like damage myself greatly. So bending is a very unique thing where you can go into it ultra confident. And the worst thing that happens, with some exceptions, is you just like have an isometric workout. You know, it's like, it's hard to take that same intensity and take it to other things. So it's like, in the terms of other lifting for me, it's got to be measured confidence. For bending, it's got to be ultimate confidence, for sure. Especially snapping too, is like, you guys get into the snapping, you got to be super confident the whole time, like not checking it every 5 seconds. You got to just be cranking this thing open, like, so confidence leading up, and then confidence while you're still in it, if it's like one of these feats that takes some measure of endurance, like the snapping, which has been something I've been even more into than the bending for like the last couple months.
Yeah, I did my first snap just before our interview with Dave, and I had to go at it fast. I've seen everybody else just go at it over and over again real fast, so that was my only thought into it. You know, wasn't even really thinking about the confidence, just I'm going to have to tear this thing apart really, really fast, because I've heard that if the metal cools down, you aren't going to do it. So,
yeah. Did you snap a red yet?
No, I have not. I was going to try some quarter square pretty soon.
Do a red, man. That'll change your whole perspective on bending those things. That was a major breakthrough too. And actually a confidence booster. If you can snap something and you feel it pliable in your hand and then come apart, like your respect for that piece of metal is like totally changed. So it's like, if you can snap it, your level of intensity and confidence going into bending it is going to be that much higher, even though it's a different, you know, it's like unbraced versus braced and so on and so on, but it still changes your perspective on a piece of metal, I think.
Yeah. I'm actually going to try a couple different things when I start bending again. And one of them is definitely snapping, because I like the brace aspect of it, but I'm a lot less flexible in the shoulders and the chest. So I'm definitely going to try I'm going to call it the fat belly method. And nice. Do the double overhand right up by your chest. I think I can get a lot of back into it that way, because there's no way I can get it under my chin and just really get the flexibility there. I'm just not flexible there. So
you should try double underhand. A lot of the bigger dudes are really good at double. McGranahan has a killer double underhand. The dude Sean Capusta, Angry Beaver, serious double underhand.
I know. John, of course, does it right by his belly too, and he does double overhand that way. But I mean, he's an alien, anyways. That guy's amazing. The only guy that can rip, you know, 60 decks of cards in half in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
But is that guy that owns Iron Mine does it that way too? Strassen? No. Not Iron Mine. The other thing, Rogue or something. I don't know.
Oh, you mean you're talking about Bader?
Bader, sorry, Bader.
He does his bends also.
Bader does it there too. So I'm like, oh, these two guys are pretty big, and they do it that way. So I might try to do it that way. And I mean, they're two huge benders, and bend a lot. So I'm like, well, maybe there's something to that. So how about trying that? Just to
Do you know anybody else that's doing the chest high double over?
Let's see. Not that I can think of right off the top of my head. I mean, we were playing around with the Heslip style for a feat of the week, but I don't know too many people that are doing it down there legit. I really don't see a lot of that going around these days.
Yeah, I've seen those two guys do it, and I know they're legit. So I was like, oh, it might be interesting to try it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'll let you know how that goes. Yeah. If I get nice. With it.
I'm always curious of how the really big guys can still get their back, like, really into it. You know, can they do it here? You know, it just makes me, you know, that's something I'm very curious about, actually.
I'll try and let you guys know. But yeah, like you're talking about, just confidence going into a bend or a lift or anything. Like I said, I have to have huge positive self-talk. So you have to have confidence. And like you were saying, you could have stupid confidence going into a bend because you're not going to really hurt yourself too bad, like you said. Yeah. And I know when I'm bending wrong because I'm like, oh, my forearms and biceps hurt. And I'm like, clearly I didn't get any back or anything into that. So I know I'm not doing something right. But it's not like, you know, I blew out a muscle or tore anything. It's just like, oh, I'm kind of sore. Oh, well. And then you move on. Like you're talking about having, I think, knowledgeable confidence when you go into lifting. Like if I go, oh, I'm going to go deadlift or I'm going to go try to bench 500 pounds right now, I'm going to crush my ribs and it's not going to be good.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, extreme confidence there won't help you, but knowing where you're at and having the confidence to do it. And like you're talking about, are you going to ride it out? I think I'm right at doing 305 on the Pollen's axle, double overhand. Nice. I'm going to be stoked about that for 2 days afterwards.
For sure. You know, before we I want to tell you guys about Jarritos bolts. Have you guys checked these out yet?
Oh yeah.
Have you ordered?
No, but I've seen some people trying those bolts. They're crazy.
When you do, make sure you use promo code CHEERS because you'll save 10%, and then some of that's coming back to support Beyond the Bent. Make sure you use promo code CHEERS because Jan is the man, and he's the true sponsor of the show, where I get a little kickback and it supports everything. And I only say these in the episodes because people actually need to listen to the episode to get the promo code. The other ones I just throw out willy-nilly. And they have bolts that are all different levels. I guarantee if you're bending yellow nails and reds and doubles, you can do the 4.8, the beginner one, and the A4, the next step up, which is a stainless bolt, which is going to be really hard on the crush. And a nightmare to snap if you're crazy enough to snap it.
Yeah, stainless, it feels a lot different. So that'd be fun.
Yeah, real hard on the crush. And then you got the A2, which comes after that, which I'd say is a little bit harder than red nail, followed by the 8.8, which is
this. That sounds crazy. I've only bent cold rolled steel, and I've only done quarter square, and then the 5/16. That's all I've done.
Damn. Oh, man. You got to get some grade fives and grade eights. So,
I progressed to the red by just cutting down.
Yep.
Quarter round and quarter square.
Yep. And then, so they have the 8.8 bolt, which is like similar to an edge. And after that, 10.9, which is like a league of its own. I think only three people have done that. And then the 12.9 for unbraced, only one guy has done that.
Alex.
And then a few guys have done, Don has done it at 6 inches braced. Me and Dave have both done it at 6.5 inches. Anton Snyden in Sweden has done it. He was the first to do it at 6.5, actually. And some other guys have done it full length. And no one snapped that one yet. Dan Dring will be the first to snap that whenever he gets around to trying to snap it. And he's also snapped a 10.9. So there's cool stuff going on. There's bare hand, one pad. I'm hoping to be the second person to maybe get all styles. Josh Goldthorpe has all styles right now. I'm missing one pad, bare hand, and reverse style. I've got all the other certs so far. I'd like to be the second guy to do it, but we'll see. But before we wrap up, I want to ask you guys, who's the strongest person you know? I want to know.
Oh, yeah, I think of strength in a lot of weird ways.
It can be any way you want, man. And I've had all different answers for this one.
Yeah, I don't know. Mom's pretty strong.
Nice. Got a bunch of moms.
You know? So I think that's a good answer.
Right. Good answer. What about you, Adam?
I'll answer both. I think when it comes to life and dealing with crap, I'd have to say my wife's pretty strong. I'd consider her. She's been through so much stuff and still has a heart of gold and will help you no matter what, even though she has a crazy life story. And then probably the strongest person I know in all aspects, I don't personally know them, guy I personally know would have to be Mike Wilfong. The guy's a beast. But as far as strength goes, I would have to say one of the guys that I idolize the most would be Big Z, Sedrunas Savickas.
Okay, yeah.
The biggest dude, not 6'8", Brian Shaw size. Guy's only, you know, 6'2", 3", and destroyed every contest he had, even against the big guys, and has to be awesome. The greatest strongman of all time, considering the Arnold Classic and how many times he podiumed and how long his career lasted.
Yeah.
So Monster Hong's brick break. Should I mention that? That was insane.
Yeah.
It was so he had an instructor that could stack 5 bricks up, like the regular 6-inch by 12-inch bricks. He could stack 5 of them on a table with no support behind him. And he could do a jump spinning back kick and break the 5 bricks.
Good Lord.
His explosive and snap was just insane because there's nothing behind the bricks. You're just going, well, it seemed like a magic trick, but no, it was
nice.
He was incredibly powerful and he had incredibly thick wrists for like a 5'9", 180 pound dude. He had thicker wrists than I do today.
Yeah. All right. Before we get you guys out of here, are you on any type of schedule with the show? Where can people find it? And when should they be on the lookout for episodes?
We announce upcoming episodes on Instagram. You'll see our little golden potato with the person's name on it. And we don't have a set schedule. Basically, the way it works is if someone wants a set of golden potatoes, they email us and let us know what kind of advice they have for the average person. If we like what they have to say, we bring them on the show and they get set of golden potatoes out of it. And the world gets
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Check us out on Spotify. That's where all our podcasts are. All our interviews are going to be.
So we'll be sending you a set of golden potatoes.
Yeah. Oh, man, thanks so much.
How are you on your fingertip pull-ups?
I don't test it that often. I did some middle finger pull-ups a couple months ago, just trying those out. I did pretty good on those.
We pull-up records on them. We have to see someone do a one-handed pull-up on them. So
I'll send one to Robert Nijedly. He'll do it for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He does did that on the flask.
Oh, man. Jeez.
And what was I going to say? Well, thanks so much for coming on, guys. This was great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anything else you want to say in closing?
Nothing. Just keep looking out for, you know, upcoming stuff that we're doing. Keep watching Beyond the Bend. You guys are awesome. We love every episode you guys have been bringing out with all the legends. It's fantastic. And we're happy to do this joint show with you for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you guys on Facebook at all?
We are on Facebook. We're on Facebook and Twitter, but we really only post on Instagram. I use Facebook for some local events and stuff, but we mainly just keep to Instagram.
I'm gonna find you after this and add you to David Horn's Steel Shredder page. That's I find besides Instagram, that's the most active community for what people are up to bending and stuff. And I know if you guys post when you have upcoming episodes there, it'd be really good for getting some more viewers. I always make sure to post my stuff there each week, and it's a really good community there. And the other thing I wanted to say, where I was spacing on, is I definitely recommend speaking to Josh Goldthorpe on your show. If I could make 2 requests, please get Josh Goldthorpe on, because he's a maniac and he's doing more in 1 year than like most legend benders are
on my list. Yeah.
And get Dan Dring too, man. Like he's so good at snapping, but like we've become good friends just through the bending community and stuff. And he's just so smart with training, and he analyzes everything to like the highest degree. He watches his own footage back, and he picks out little things to make it better. Like this dude holds the record for a red nail snap in like 30 seconds or something like that. Crazy. Wow. I mean, he's just like a super intense, intelligent competitor and everything. He has a powerlifting background and also jiu-jitsu as well. You guys would have a good time talking to him. So Josh Goldthorpe and Dan Drink, make sure you guys get those on the show.
We'll reach out to him for sure.
Right on. Yeah, all right, guys. Say,
thank you. That's awesome. Thank you for doing a crossover with us, getting us out there. And we're excited just to keep going with our podcast, but also starting Saturday, we're reopening our gym to the community, and we're going to have to say, watch out for our YouTube channel, because we're going to have some crazy feats of strength this Saturday with our guest that's coming.
Awesome.
Giant dude, Big Bad Santa Albie's going to be over here, and you're going to see some crazy lifts and things that he's going to do. So we're excited for that. Excited to also be able to put shows back on for people as well. So
definitely. That's great, man. 400-pound
massive muscle.
All right. Yeah. Love it, guys. I'll be paying attention for sure, and I look forward to the episodes in the future for sure.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And thank you for your help with the whole podcasting thing. That's awesome. Appreciate you.
My pleasure. All right, we'll be in touch. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Enjoy your day.